And this month's speaker is Cliff from Oceanside, California.
Hi, my name is Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. This is a new meeting. Looks like an old meeting to me. Tremendous. What energy in a room. It's great. Really, AA is alive and well. I even saw about 50% of the people setting up chairs tonight were gals. I'm going to take that home and tell them about it, you know. Jesus, unbelievable. It's really exciting. We're just sitting up in the front here, just hear the buzz, hear all that energy going in the room, and know you're in a real AA meeting, a real one. I'm glad to be here. I really appreciate being invited to come. It's certainly my pleasure. United Airlines, but other than that, it's terrific. And of course, my favorite baby, Mr. Twinkles, read the traditions tonight. My wife sponsors, in Al-Anon, sponsors his wife, Twinkles. So I named him Mr. Twinkles. And he appreciates it a great deal. And he sponsors that yo-yo, and he sponsors half the known world. And met some guy tonight, and I'm his great-great-great-grand sponsor. I went, oh, shit. That's going too far. But I appreciate being here. I really do. I'm kind of a run-of-the-mill drunk. You'll have speakers that are a lot more exciting than my stupid story. You know, guys that went to prison and nut houses and death row and, you know, all that stuff that gives you stature on the program. You know. I'm just a little fat school teacher, drank too much. I'll do the best I can with what I have. I'm one of those functioning alcoholics. 95 to 97% of us that die of the disease of alcoholism, the experts tell us, whoever the experts are. I think a guy with a PhD who's still drinking is an expert. But the experts say that 95 to 97% of the people who die of the disease of alcoholism are like moi, functioning alcoholics. Guys who get up every day and go to work and do the job, huh? And do it better than you. Who do it better than anybody. I mean, I'm a goer and a doer and an achiever. A functioning alcoholic. My buddy Holmes says a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. Don't tell that in an Al-Anon meeting. No. That annoys them. They do not find that funny. Makes them go. You married guys, you remember that?
Don't you think you had a few too many?
To say you had a few too few, that's your problem, lady. Have a couple to loosen up, for God's sakes, you know. Mine was a counter.
That's your fifth one today. Shut up and eat your breakfast, will you? Leave me the hell alone.
But I'm a goer and a doer. I'm an achiever. I'm a functioning alcoholic. I came from an alcoholic family.
Oh, really? Yes. Honest to God.
My mother died on Skid Row in Los Angeles at the age of 43. She fell down a flight of stairs and broke her neck in a drunken stupor. And on her death certificate, it says accidental fall. And my dad died at 61 of alcoholism. He was a functioning alcoholic, too. My sister died of alcoholism. My aunts and uncles died of alcoholism. My grandparents died of alcoholism. I'm the only one left because I went to the ANA, okay? But I'm not an alcoholic because my father and mother were alcoholics. It's a genetic, this, you know. The experts say it's a genetic tendency. Tendency, my ass. The Roach family, it's not a tendency. It's supposed to be a recessive gene, you know. In the Roach family, it's a dominant gene. A little blue gene down at the end of the chromosome going, Only has one thing to say. One more! One more! But I'm not an alcoholic because I come from an alcoholic family. When I was new in AA, there was a wonderful, wonderful man. He was a judge up in Ventura. His name was Dick Heaton. He's been dead many years. He had probably 25 years when I was... Oh, my sobriety day is the 13th of January, 1970. So, and he was... You know, when I was new, he had 30 years, okay? And Judge Heaton was so good, so kind to me. He was a wonderful guy. But he was the president of Mensa. He was the national president of the Smart People's Club. You know what I mean? Mensa. I can't even spell Mensa. But anyway, he had been a terrible slipper, as I had been a slipper. And so I listened when he talked. And he and another guy from Mensa did a study of alcoholism while they were drinking. They spent 2 years drunk studying alcoholism, you know. Brilliant guys. And after 2 years of study, they came to the conclusion that alcoholism is caused by drinking. Good enough for the president of Mensa, it's good enough for me, okay? So my alcoholism is caused by drinking alcohol. I never have been a social drinker. I really don't know what they do. I don't like them. Do you? Do you ever drink with those weenies? You know, you take the cap off, they say, I'll get it. I don't trust people like that. I just don't trust them. But I sponsor guys, you know, who are they're successful drinkers, whatever the hell that is. You know, they drank socially for years and then crossed the invisible line and became alcoholics. When I was 16, I swallowed a quarter of a pint of 10 High and I crossed the invisible line. That's the last social drink I ever had in my whole life. I always drank alcoholically and I was a bad drunk, always a bad drunk. I'm a fighting drunk. Any other macho guys here? I'd love to fight. When I was drunk, I'd rather fight than have sex. Well, that's called step two. I was raised in this Irish Catholic family. Oh, really? Yes. Wasn't for us, they'd have these meetings in phone booths. But the men in my family were tough guys. They really were tough guys. But I had this back problem, a big yellow streak down the middle of it. And in my case, I don't know what you were like, but the millisecond that I would get enough booze to become brave, I would lose my muscle coordination. And you can get seriously damaged doing that. And all my life I took these legendary beatings. I was proud of them. You know, I'd rather have been the B-Tor than the BT, but what the hell? You know what I mean? It was better than nothing. I met my wife in college, San Jose State College, and she was down on Skid Row looking for an alcoholic to abuse her. Well, if you're looking to be abused, you got your boy here, I'll tell you for sure. And we entered this 20-year suicide pact together. Well, I don't know what you got, but we had that dual disease. We had alcoholism and Catholicism. Consequently, we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes. It's what it seemed like to me, anyway, you know. Every time I come out of a blackout, in the hell is that? And we ended up with five of them. And they're all right when they're little, like kittens. But they grow. And the older they got, the weirder they got. And God knows the weirder she got. And I was the head nut. And finally, I became a school teacher. A guy commits felonies in blackouts, becomes a school teacher. Just a hobby, lighten up. I taught in the San Joaquin Valley there for a couple, 3 years. Then we moved to Oceanside, California. Now, Oceanside is just 30 miles north of San Diego, right on the blue Pacific. Beautiful, wonderful weather. And I went to work at Oceanside High there as a teacher. And if it's not a contradiction of some kind, I was a successful teacher. I was always a good teacher. I loved teaching. I loved the kids. The kids loved me. And I was really good at it. They asked my Al-Anon one time, how come your husband's such a good high school teacher? She said, well, he's a very well-educated adolescent. I hate it when they're accurate and cruel, don't you? So as I said, I was a highly successful teacher there. And, of course, naturally being Marvin Macho, I became a surfer dude. Of course, what? Who wouldn't, you know? And in 1965, another teacher and I, another surfer dude, we got this surfboard shop down at the beach there in Oceanside. You know, we're going to rent surfboards and fix surfboards and give surf lessons, never have to work again, you know. And the mayor of the town had this little building, had been a bar, was all beaten up, right on the beach, though. I mean, right on the water, can you imagine? Right on the sand. And he gave us the building to use. He was just sitting on it, you know, to sell it later, which he did, made $1 million. But the building was all beat up, but we fixed it up, you know, we painted it and put windows in and got a refrigerator. A few months later, we got some surfboards, too. Now, oh, can you imagine for a couple of budding drunks right on the beach, right on the sand? And we became sunset connoisseurs. We used to measure sunsets by martinis. Somebody came down and said, I'd like to rent a surfboard. Screw off, Charlie. We're watching a sunset now, you know. I used to mix them. We used to measure sunsets by martinis, and I would mix them. Looks like about an 8 tonight. You know? Best one we ever had. We had a 15 martini sunset. Oh, you should have seen it. It was glorious. Sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. You remember that? I think that ought to be on the 20 questions, don't you? You ever had a sunburned mouth? Nah, get the hell out of here. You're not ready yet, pal. Come back when you're ready, you know. But we did great. We had a great summer there, but the winter came in February of 65. I went down to the shop to fix a board. Sunday morning. Had a hangover. Oh, really? Yes. And I was very thirsty. I went to the refrigerator to see if there's a Coke or something in there. And my partner had been there the night before, and he left about this much vodka in a half-pint bottle. My dad would have called it a lick and a smell. And there was some orange juice in the refrigerator. And I said, I was not a morning drinker in 1965, but there was an orange juice and the vodka in the refrigerator. I thought, boy, that'll put the fire out. So I mixed up that little dinky drink and drank it. You new guys tonight, welcome. God love you, welcome. You walked into a real AA meeting here. Stay away from him. Oh, look at him. Well, if I knew, I'd go nowhere near that. Thug. I told him, you look like a bodyguard, for God's sake. But anyway, you new guys, I always like to tell this part because I like to watch new people's face when I tell this part. You know, I drank that little bitty drink, you know, to put the fire out, and then I went on about my business, and I'm sanding on the surfboard, and that half a shot got in my bloodstream. You know how it'll do? Just... And my mind talked to me. Did your mind talk to you, newcomers? How do you know? My mind said, shame on you, Cliff. Shame, shame, shame. That was Woody's booze you drank. You're way ahead of me over here. It says, why don't you go up to the liquor store and get old Woody a pint? That's the kind of guy I am. You know what I mean? That afternoon, I got Woody a fifth. And you know, I ended up just bory-eyed drunk, my dad used to say. Just resin all over me. The board was screwed forever. The shop was a mess. I crawled home literally 11 blocks on my hands and knees. 11 blocks. Got up the next morning, called Ralph for an hour or so. Remember him? Ralph. Oh, I used to hate it when you get down to just you and Ralph. Oh, I hate that part. Boy, that's being worth being sober right there. And after I recall Ralph all by himself again, remember? Dry Ralph. And, no, you don't forget that. I don't care how long you've been sober. You don't forget that. Oh, we got audience participation here. No, I work alone, darling. Thanks. I just didn't do this. I flew up here by myself, so never mind. Yeah. And anyway, then I got up the next morning after I called Ralph. I said to my wife, I got to do something about my drinking. I'm getting drunk when I don't even mean to. And she had cut this thing out of the paper. She had that pre-Al-Anon tick in her eye by then. And the little thing in the paper said what it's always said, the only ad we've ever had. If you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to quit, call Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it. I think it's perfect. It's how I feel about it. If you'd rather drink, have at it, pal. I don't care. But if you want to quit, there's a lot of people in this room right here. They'll go to the ends of the earth for you. I know them, and I know what they'll do. But if you'd rather drink, we have a salute. Okay. Anyway, I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and old Stan came and got me. Old guy died a few years ago, 53 years sobriety. And he took me to some meetings, and in 65, the meetings were very small in AA in North County. There were only 12 meetings in the North County, and, you know, six dodos sitting around a table. And after about 3 days, I realized I had been hasty. I had jumped the gun here, I'll tell you. Because I have to tell you, I'm highly educated. I have degrees, you know. My late sponsor, Bill, used to say he's been educated far beyond his intelligence. But anyway, it looked to me like these people had the collective IQ of an orange. You know what I mean? I tried to help them. About the third night, this guy said to me, hey, we keep it simple here. I said, no kidding. You could have fooled me, Leroy. So I hung around 5 months and then I resigned from AA. You ever done that? That really upsets them, doesn't it? Yeah. Cliff who? And then I started drinking again, and then for the next 5 years, I was an AA loser. And I don't like to remember this part of my story, but this is my story. And I was a worse kind of loser. I was an overeducated, pompous, smirk. I can't even smirk like I used to. I had that smirk down. You just sit in the last row, you know, in all my pomposity. And judge these morons. And I would laugh. Like I'd come to AA for 30 days and I'd be drunk for 2 years. That's a slip. Then I'd come to AA for 40 days, and I'd be drunk for a year and a half. And one time I came in the afternoon, about 4 o'clock, and these four guys quadro-stepped me at the old club there in Oceanside. You ever been quadro-stepped? They get in all four sides, you just woo, 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 woo. Oh, I got the message that day, I'll tell you. I levitated out of the building. And I had a buddy, Big John. He was worse than me. So I went over to Big John's house and pounded on the door. And John came to the door and said, John, we're alcoholics and we have to go to AA. Big John said, oh, okay. Just missed it by 2 weeks. And so I led Big John to the meeting that night and became his sponsor. And the next day, we both got drunk. And so that's the way I treated AA. But, you know, I'd come to AA, they'd say, Cliff, if you stay here, life will get better. If you go back out there, it's going to get worse. And I'd go back out there, and it would get worse. And I'd come back, and they'd tell me, and I'd go back out there, and it would get worse. And I always knew more than they did. You know, they were just a bunch of ignorant clowns, as far as I'm concerned. My life was slipping between my fingers. But to the end, I was a functioning alcoholic. That's how I almost died of alcoholism. The week I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, this time, I weighed 163 pounds, 4% body fat. I used to get it measured all the time because I know. I used to surf for like 3 hours and then get out and run 5 miles. Could bench press 285. Took me 25 minutes to pass a mirror. For God's sakes, don't ask me for directions. I'd say, yeah,
right over.
My daughters used to get money from me all the time. They'd come up to me when I didn't have a shirt on, which was most of the time. They'd say, V up, Daddy, V up. They go, oh, can I have $5? Yeah, sure. Yeah. I was 2 years sober before I figured that out. I was one of the top 3 debate coaches in the United States. Uh-huh. That's roughly equivalent to be one of the top 3 prostitutes in Elko, Nevada. But among speech coaches, it's a big deal. Okay? Any former prostitutes, I apologize. I became one of the top debate coaches in the nation by mistake. Principal called me in one day, which he was wont to do, and he had gotten this flyer in the mail about a debate and a speech tournament which was being held 30 miles down the road at San Diego State College. And he said, you're teaching a speech class. Why don't you take some kids? I bet that'd be good for your students. Why don't you do that? And I was in big trouble, so I said, what a good idea. And I found about 6 yo-yos wanted to give it a go, and we went 30 miles down the road to San Diego State College, and We were blown away when we got there. There were like 50 schools participating in this thing, like 500 contestants. The boys were in 3-piece suits with vests and ties. The girls in these lovely business clothes were in Levi's and sweatshirts. What the hell do we know? And we got slaughtered. We didn't win a round. I mean, we got butchered. They ground us in the goddamn dirt is what they did. I know what kind of drunk you are, but I don't care for losing. And I'm steamed anyway. And I went in the coach's room. There's about 20 coaches in there, and they're all pals. They've been doing this for years. They're buddies, and they snubbed me, it seemed to me. So I hung around all day. They could snub you longer that way. You know how we are. One guy there really pissed me off. He had a lot of hair. That bothered me right away. And, you know, no, it's that steel gray, gorgeous steel gray hair. Not a hair out of place. 9 barbers to get it right. Had about $1,000 suit on. The other coaches did this when they went in front of him. And about 2 in the afternoon, this guy turns to me and he says, where are you from? God, I was grateful to be spoken to finally. I said, Oceanside. And he said, oh. Where's that? 30 miles up the goddamn road. Where's that? I don't know what kind of drunk you are, but he gave me a resentment. I don't mean a resentment. I mean a resentment. And I went back to Oceanside High, and I built a speech team. Took me 4 or 5 years, but I built me a juggernaut speech team is what I did. I built a powerhouse speech team, and I did it with sheer hatred. I mean, 7 in the morning till 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, I'm in their faces screaming and yelling, cursing, coaching. Guy next door to me said, I'd love to watch them leave in your room wiping the spit off their glasses. You know? A reporter said to my captain one time, what's the secret of your coach's success? The kid said, terror. She wasn't lying. She's the chairman of the speech department and the chancellor of women's studies at San Francisco State College today. Didn't do her any harm. I always felt so sorry for Bobby Knight. They fired him for choking one guy. Yeah. And it was a guy. Do what they don't want to do. I mean, you were in this white fury all day. And I don't drink all day. I'm a functioning alcoholic. Out in the glove compartment of the car waiting for me is a half a pint of hot vodka. Or whatever Thrifty had in the basket that week. I didn't open it. I don't touch it all day. See what I mean? I don't eat all day either. And I drink 400 cups of coffee all day, too. And I stay pissed off. And that half a pint's in the glove compartment calling to me all day. Go get him, Cliff, baby. I'm waiting, darling. That's what us functioning alcoholics do. The longer you make it wait, the better, huh? I see some heads. Yeah, you know. I finished the last kid at 9:30 at night, and I'd out to that car, and I'd open up that hot vodka. Light one of those cheap stogies I smoked in those days. Now, I always drank half the half pint. Just... Oh, is there anything like hot vodka? Oh. I like to talk at Alan on me to talk about hot vodka. They go, hey, ooh, ooh. But you and I know. Into the bloodstream. Puff of my stogie and think, damn, you're a good coach. And then I'd go home and really start drinking. After I finished my half pint in the darkness of my car and had my 8 minutes. And I never told you about the 8 minutes ever. All the times I was an AA loser, in and out and in and out and in and out. I never once told you about the 8 minutes. I don't know what your story is, but in my case, after I drink about a half an hour, it doesn't matter what I'm drinking. After I drink about a half an hour, something happens to me. And I have about 8 minutes where everything in my life is okay. I'm okay and you ain't so bad either. You know what I mean? I am enough for about 8 minutes. Goes downhill a lot after that. But then I would drive home after I would have my 8 minutes and I would start really drinking, and we had these 5 kids, and I'm a real violent drunk and a real mean, sarcastic drunk. And I got drunk every night at home for the last 6 or 7 years of my drinking. And I turned that house into an insane asylum. I see a lot of you in this room were my kids. Huh? Just total insanity. Every time I read chapter 5, I always say, no human power could have relieved my family. I mean, we were all stark, raving mad. We're talking the late 60s here, okay? 3 of my kids were in high school in the late 60s. My oldest son is working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. Never had to give him any spending money, I'll guarantee. I used to hit him up for a fifth about once a week.
Yeah, Dad, what do you need?
Had hair down to his butt, and his head went like this all the time. Called his mother, man. Hey, man, what's for dinner?
He loved LSD. Oh, he loved LSD. Scare the hell out of me. I'd be right in the middle of a sentence. He'd say, what was that? Of course, the shape I'm in, I said, I don't know. What was it? Where? What?
All total insanity. Just a zoo. Just a nut house. You can't get here from there. We were all crazy. It was too late. No school of psychiatry could have saved my family. But I built that speech team. I'm dying of alcoholism, but I built that speech team. And after a couple of years, my team won one of those tournaments. But I didn't say anything to the gray-haired guy. Remember him? I didn't say anything to him yet. I can wait. I think revenge is better than Christmas. The next year, there were like 12 or 14 tournaments. My team took first place in every single tournament. The next year, there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in the tournament. And my team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to the gray-haired guy, and I put my nose right against his, and I said, do you know where Oceanside is now? And he just looked blank. He said, what are you talking about? I said, don't you remember 4 or 5 years ago you said to me, Oceanside, where's that? And he said, we just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was. The story of my life. This guy for 4 or 5 years in his bed in San Diego every night. I'm up in Oceanside. I'll get you, I got you. There's a story I almost never tell, but you guys are too much. I got to tell you this story. A few years ago, I had a little prostate trim surgery. just a light trim. And this guy screwed it all up, to tell you the truth. So I'm suffering for several months. I'm suffering. Not in silence, but I'm suffering. And I've had enough. See, this is a couple of years ago. I'm sober 30-some years then, okay? If you're new, this will give you hope. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I picked up the phone and I called a doctor. The little girl comes on and says, doctor's office. This is Cliff Roach. I said, that butcher screwed it up. I'm in terrible pain. I told her where the pain was and where it traveled to and into great detail. But 10 minutes screaming and yelling, and I wound it up by saying, I am pissed the bed. I didn't do that when I was drunk, for Christ's sakes. She said, Mr. Roach, this is your eye doctor's office. You see why I don't tell that real often. I got to trust the crowd to tell them that joke. But I'll tell you, the growth was, this gal and I laughed so hard, we both got hysterical. I was sitting on the floor. We screamed and we laughed and we laughed and we laughed. So there's growth there, huh? About a month later, I went in the eye doctor's office and I said, where's Evelyn? And they said, oh, she's over there. And I said, Evelyn, I'm Mr. Roach. And Evelyn said, hi, Mr. Roach. And everybody else in the office went, that Fink. But right after that deal with the speech coach, my wife and I had one of our main events, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. And I threatened to move out that night again. And everybody said, yeah, I'll go for it, Dad. Woo-hoo! And so I loaded up my station wagon and I moved out down by the beach where I wanted to live with my surfboard anyway. I'd said for years I'd unload that witch and those long-haired dope fiend children, I'd be okay. And I'd gotten rid of them, and that wasn't it. I was just drunk all the time. I was missing work, which had always been my badge of courage. I never missed work. But I was missing work, and I felt like my life was slipping between my fingers. And I went by the house one afternoon. I was haranguing my wife about money, and the hashish salesman was kind of bobbing in the background there. Humming a tune from the planet Pluto. As I look back on it, it's probably the stupidest thing I ever did. I turned to him and I said, Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house? And old Dave looked me right in the eye and he said, it's beautiful. And I didn't know it for a couple hours, but that's my bottom. That's as far as I'm going. I lost the respect of a 16-year-old kid. And what I realized that evening as I sat there and watched the most beautiful sunsets that I've ever seen, I realized that I'd given up my own self-respect a long time before David gave it up. I've heard thousands or hundreds of footsteps, and I never met an alcoholic yet who loved themselves all their lives, you know. But I had a few things about myself that I'd always respected, and I realized as the sun was going down that evening that I had traded in those few things about myself that I'd like for the privilege of drinking booze. And I went in the bedroom and dug out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new or nearly new here tonight, get one. Get a big book. That's the program. And I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous for 3 days and three nights. I called into work. I didn't go to work. I slept a little bit. I ate even less. And I read the big book for 3 days and three nights. I had read it in one of my travels through the program before. Being an English teacher, I thought it was very poorly written. Oh, it read a lot better this time. And in the second edition, there was a story called The Professor and the Paradox. And he saved my life. That's in the new book, Experience, Strength, and Hope. The Professor and the Paradox. He was another egotistical school teacher. And he saved my life. And on the third time through the book, on the 13th of January, 1970, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on page 63 again. And if you're new, on page 63, there's a little prayer. And that little prayer is step 3. I always called it the formal terms of surrender. And I knelt down on that filthy linoleum floor on that dump of the beach where I was living, and I read that prayer out loud to myself. I read, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And in those hundreds of footsteps that I've heard through the years, the number one defect of character of every man I've ever heard is self-obsession. God knows it's mine. I built a prison in here before I was 4 years old. I don't know why. I'm not interested in psychological reasons. But I built this wall to keep you out, I guess. And all I ever did was build this prison to keep me in. And that's where I lived, all alone in there. And Peggy, when I first heard Peggy talk from Nebraska, she said, alcoholism is the only prison where the locks are on the inside. And my little sponsor said, there's 12 keys to let you out, Cliff. And because you're a brilliant intellectual, we numbered them for you. And I had a spiritual awakening that morning. It was something quiet. I knew my life was going to be okay. You know, for 32 years, I looked for a way to tell you what happened to me that morning. And 2 years ago in the Grapevine, this little gal who got sober in a treatment center in Cincinnati, Ohio. She was 17 years old, and she knelt down just exactly as I had 33 years before. She knelt down and read that prayer out loud to herself in this treatment center. And she said, I was engulfed by a great laughing love. She got it. She nailed it. And that night I was at Bill Blake's house. He's been dead now 14 years. I miss him every day of my life. My little sponsor, he sponsored me for 20 years. I'm knocking on his door that night. And Margie, Bill's wife, opened the door, and here's the loser on the porch. 5 1/2 years in and out, smart ass, overeducated, pompous ass, loser. Are you new tonight? Listen, I have never seen anyone so glad to see me in my life. This loser, she saw me, that lady just lit up. She said, oh, Cliff. In the house I go. Pours me a cup of coffee. She said, oh, this is wonderful. This is great. She said, Bill's been nuts lately. He's had nobody to work with. Oh, this is so great. Then Bill comes in. Bill, hey, Cliff. About a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I can do to help you folks out? You're glad to help any way I can. They made me feel like Cliff's here. We can start AA now, you know? 2 weeks later, I was in a newcomer meeting, and one of the other newcomers said, what do you mean this is a selfish program? And when the guy asked the question, I knew the answer. See, I got the answer the night I got here. They were tickled to death for me. They've been praying for me for 5 years, but they were more glad for themselves because Bill and Margie knew the great secret. You can't have it unless you give it away. You can't keep it unless you give it away. My little sponsor had a theory that he taught to me. He believed that everybody who comes to AA has alcoholism. We can take care of that. And he believes everybody who comes to AA has their own particular brand of insanity. And the steps and the program will take care of that too. He says, we got a wrench that'll fit every nut. But my sponsor also believed that everyone who comes to AA has a gift of some kind that you can do better than other people can do. You have something you can do to make AA better. And these goofs that started this meeting, they know what my sponsor was talking about. You know, this thing started, what, in November. Look at it. It's coming out the seams. These are people who know how to get ready to give it away. There's an MD friend of mine, lives in the San Fernando Valley. There's a big group in a church. And they leave cigarette butts out on a Saturday night. This doctor gets up Sunday morning, 4 a.m., and sweeps the place so they won't lose their meeting hall. There's a guy in Long Beach who plays the piano before the meeting. There's a guy in my home group, Carlos. If you're new, he'll find you. You know what I mean? Son of a bitch has an antenna of some kind. You will not escape Carlos. My sponsor, Bill, was the worst speaker in the history of AA. Oh, he was awful. He couldn't get out of World War II, you know? But you put my sponsor in the front seat of a car with a newcomer. He was magic. Nobody ever escaped him. Nobody ever. God knows I didn't. Nobody ever escaped that little guy. And by the way, that was the last, that night when he was so glad to see me, that was the last nice thing he ever said to me as long as he lived. Now, there may be, you know, new ones here that need tender, loving care. but I didn't. I needed a strong sponsor. And I, the nicest thing he said the first 5 years was, shut up. Shut up. I told him, I have degrees, you know. And he says, so does a thermometer. You know where they stick that sometimes, don't you? I thought the first step was, shut up and get in the car. Now here I am 34 years sober plus, and I realize the first step is, shut up and get in the car. In the back seat, on the hump. There's a method to that too. That makes, if you're the guy in the middle on the hump, you become a 12-stepper. You find your new guy. Come with us. I'm on the window now, baby. Shut up. We were talking at dinner tonight. Take the cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth and shut up. If you knew something, you wouldn't be here. Oh, he was here. But he took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. You want to talk about love? Put up with an idiot like me for 2 consecutive years? Moron. He took me to all meetings like this. He took me all over Southern California. We went to L.A. 2 nights a week, 100 miles each way. Went to San Diego, went to Laguna. You know, everywhere he took me to meetings where people were having a good time. See, he knew me. I can't stay here unless I can have a good time. I can't live without the laughter. I'm sorry. I mean, I sponsor guys that love those great tunnel meetings. You know what I mean? They love the 6 guys sit around the table. Stay sober. You have to have hemorrhoids to get the expression just right. Sobriety is like this long, gray tunnel. And you trudge. Every year a trap door opens and a cake comes down. I'm going to go where the laughter is. I'm sorry. I can't live without the laughter. To me, the laughter is the most spiritual part of the program. Nothing I laugh at will ever come back and haunt me again. Once I start laughing at it, I'm free. It'll never come back and haunt me again. The things I used to lie awake at and grind my teeth down thinking about, they're funny now. I'd love to get me a new guy, some scuzzbag, you know. Take him to a meeting. Take him to another meeting. Take him to another. After maybe about the 12th meeting, he goes, gotcha. I gotcha now, you. Because once we get, you know, if you're new tonight, you've been laughing, you're screwed. Because when you're laughing, you know you know you belong. You know what makes it worthwhile. Oh, I love the laughter. Nothing will come back and bite me on the butt ever again once I laugh at it. I love the laughter of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know what you were like when you were new. Some of you are new. But when I was new, I've always known what's wrong with me. I've always known what my problem was. You probably knew what yours was, too. I was never loved enough. There you have it. You know, raised in that alcoholic zoo, you know, lived all my life. And nobody ever loved. Of course, what I didn't know about me is there isn't enough for somebody like me. I mean, you got everybody in the world. China, everywhere said, let's love Cliff. I'd say, is that it? I'm the black hole of love. Goes in there, you never see it again. You know? See, but the little sponsor, he knew what my real problem was. He never told me because he knew I was too stupid or too brilliant. What's the difference? You're just as dead. He never told me what my real problem was, but he knew my problem had always been I never loved enough. I never loved at all. I didn't know how to start to learn how to love. And so what he did is he made me take loving actions against my better judgment. You know, like these guys that were setting up the meeting here tonight, men and women taking those tables down and putting the chairs up. Made me stand at the door and greet people. God, I hated that because I'm a snob. You know, hi, what's your name? Like I really kill it. Took me with him on all his 12-step calls. We used to get 4 and 5 12-step calls a week. And took me with him on all his 12-step calls. There was a guy named Al who was a worse loser than me. He was a 10-year loser. I was only a 5-year loser. And, of course, my kids were on drugs, and my wife wouldn't go to Al-Anon. I had a mean mouth, and I'd go to his house sobbing, telling him, what people are doing to me. And he'd listen to my whole dreary story, and then he would say, go get Al and take him to the meeting. What? That's like asking a guy, what time is it? He says, the horse is dead. What? What the hell, answer? I'm having a nervous breakdown here. But If you're new, on that morning when I turned and I surrendered it all. I surrendered my own judgment. So I would do what the old fool said. I would go get Al, whom I despised. Oh, he was a blowhard. Blah, 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 blah. Drive Al to the meeting. We'd set the meeting up, make the coffee. Everybody come, everybody go home. Al and I set the meeting down, wash the coffee pots. He was real shaky. And we had real cups that he had to wash because he just put his hands in the water and just had... You know. But I could drive. Put the blowhard in the car, blah, 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 and drive him home. And I'd let Al off, see? And I'd start driving home, and this feeling would come over me. Just better than the 8 minutes ever was. It'd start right here, and would just spread out. Terrified me. I thought it's because I got rid of Al, you know? But there's a cumulative thing that happens here. You know, that feeling kept coming and coming and, you know, and would last longer and longer and longer. And one day I figured out what it was. It was the feeling of being enough. And 34 plus years later, if you're new tonight, almost every day of my life, I'm enough. What a gift. What a precious, powerful gift that is to be enough. And Al got drunk once more. He had 11 months and 18 days. And he'd been 10 years, and he was just destroyed. And guess who he called? And I went over to get him. And he was weeping and carrying on. Come on, Al, get a shower, get your clothes changed. We'll go to a meeting tonight. Hey, it's one day at a time. Come on, Dennis. It's one day at a time for 60 days so far. I said, come on, you know, come on, we'll go to the meeting tonight. We'll have... And all of a sudden, out of my mouth, I said, I love you, Al. And I don't know if Al even heard me, but I heard me and I knew it was true. I wanted Al to be sober as much as I wanted to be sober myself. And if you knew here tonight, that's why I flew up here today. I don't have any great goddamn message. I'm just a goofy drunk, you know what I mean? But if it would help you, I'll go to the ends of the earth for you. This room is full of people, even the hoodlum over here. And if you don't get sober, he'll break your goddamn leg. You know? Yeah, this room is full of people who'll go to the ends of the earth for you if you want to be sober, you know? And so Al got sober. Al's still sober today. He's the guru of Santa Maria. He's still a blowhard, too, you know? But he and I became this we were this great 12-step team. We would do the good guy, bad guy, you know, like cops. We'd almost get in fist fights out in front of the house. I'm the good guy this time. No, you were less. You know, and the one guy said to the guy, you gotta shut your mouth, quit your goddamn whining, get your ass to the meeting. The other guy would say, oh, they're playing our song. Doesn't it get you? Doesn't it get you? They're coming. They're coming for us. But and Al's still a boy, and I love the guy, and he loves me to this day today. And that was the first person I ever really remembered loving for fun and for free. Then we get these newcomers, and then you watch a guy, the light come on in a guy's eyes. Watch him get this thing. See what, how his life started to change. And your love then just gets out of bounds. And one night Clancy was talking and he said, I look at my watch, I don't really give a shit, but it makes you feel better. Makes you feel better. You know, the watch doesn't work. No, it's not an hour yet. Not an hour. Close, but not an hour. But one night Clancy was talking. And Clancy was my sponsor's sponsor. And that's where all this crap came from. Clancy that night was talking after I learned to love newcomers. He said, treat your kids like newcomers. You know, I had worked with a lot of newcomers by then, and you do the best you can. You hold it out for them. If they want it, good. If not, you know, you do the best you can, but you don't take it personally. And I heard Clancy say that. I thought, what a theory. And I went home and knelt down and turned my kids over to the higher power. And the higher power has done an incredible job with my children. My youngest son, Chris, has 16 years of sobriety. Hell of a guy. Wonderful man, you know. Great husband, great friend, wonderful son. He's so good to me. He lives in our area. My middle daughter, Jan, who had been the most disturbed of all our kids, she had 11 years and got a bad back and started taking pills. Now, I have no opinion on pills. They cut you off in the sunlight of the spirit and kid your ass dead, but I have no opinion on them. And then so she drank again. And now she has 3 years of sobriety, and she's doing fantastic. She sits right behind me in our home group in case I have to hear something. You know? She's a beautiful, beautiful gal. My eldest daughter went wrong. Oh. She'd been in Al-Anon 18 years. That's what she's cackling about down here. She knows my daughter, Kitty. She's an incredible woman. And our youngest daughter, I don't know what the hell's the matter with her. She was only 7 when we got here. She just grew up straight in a crooked family. Do you ever see one like that? She's just fine. She's always been fine. She comes to everybody's cakes. Good night. You know. Just had a big wedding with her recently. Now, the hashish salesman... He's the vice president of an international corporation. Go figure. He was an agriculture major. I don't ask him what he grows. None of my... Now, he's one of the foremost experts in the world on coffee. Can you imagine? He's in Africa right now. He knows how to crossbreed coffees and that kind of thing. So he flies all over the world, South America, Africa. He goes to meetings everywhere. He has over 3 years of sobriety now. He lives up the river here at White Salmon. And so he'll be coming down to this meeting when he gets back from Africa. I'll be sure of that. I don't sponsor him, but I threaten him a lot. But he's doing fantastic. And he called me last year. My daughter Jan and my son Chris, both are GSRs in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when Dave called me and told me that he was a GSR, I just got crying. I couldn't stop. I just couldn't stop. Because, you know, my first 20 years of sobriety, I was very active in service. I've been a GSR and a DCM and the area treasurer and the area chairman and the New York delegate in panel 26. And my buddies used to make fun of me. They used to say, "What do you spend all that time in that service crap for?" And I used to say to them, because I want AA to be here for my kids if they need it. And I don't want it to be some watered-down psychological bullshit. I want it to be the spiritual program of Alcoholics Anonymous that little electrician brought to me. And now 3 of my kids needed Alcoholics Anonymous, and AA was here for them. And it was the AA that was given to me. And now 2 of my kids are GSRs. Because we got a couple of grandkids. If you're new tonight, you don't have to believe that all the good things that have happened in my life and my wife's life and my kids' life, you don't have to believe that it's going to happen to you. I didn't believe it was going to happen to me. I believed it happened to Bill, and that kept me in the car for a year. Now, you don't have to believe it's going to happen to you, but you do have to believe this. You do have to believe that it happened to me. The sick, neurotic, crazy, angry man lives almost every day of his life just like that book promised me I would. Happy and joyous and free. And that's how I live, and I hope you do too.